Good morning. So how many people are familiar with the National Core Indicators, just so I get a sense? Oh, that's fantastic. Okay, then I won't belabor the long version of introducing NCI to everybody. What are we going to be talking about?
How about down?
I did it. Oh, there. Oh, you've got NumLock on. See, that's a problem. These are our disclosures. We have nothing to disclose. We're going to talk about, first of all, at sort of a meta level, in our National Core Indicators data, do we see any ethnic, racial differences, in particular in preventive screenings? Secondly, taking a deeper dive and controlling for some personal characteristics that tend to be connected with access to preventive care to see whether those discrepancies, disparities still remain. Finally, giving you a sneak peek on some pretty unvetted data that we've added questions to National Core Indicators on certain chronic conditions. So I'm giving you a very preliminary look at that data. It begs more questions, perhaps, than it answers, but it is interesting. So what is NCI? Very quickly, it is a collaboration between us at the Human Services Research Institute and the National Association of State Directors of Developmental Disability Services. And we've been at this since 1997. It's been an incredible journey, very, very exciting. And it really is aimed at measuring the performance of public systems. So the outcomes for people engaged in publicly supported services to people with intellectual and developmental disabilities. We started in the late 90s with 6 participating states. We are now up to 42 states, which is quite extraordinary. And we're recently going to be including the 21 regional centers in California, which will almost double the database, and which will also give us some very rich data about people with autism, which we really haven't had in the past. More recently, we've added another tool to the toolkit, and that is National Core Indicators for people with disabilities and who are aging. And we are currently in the first year of data collection there in about 13 states. It's catching on very quickly among public managers in aging and disability. So we look forward very soon in the next couple of months to some preliminary data. As I mentioned, we now have 42 states, including DC, one COG, a group of counties, plus the 21 regional centers in California. The survey itself, from which we have drawn the data for this presentation, is a face-to-face survey, not over the phone, nothing mailed. This is all face-to-face survey. It includes 3 sections: the background section, which is retrieved from records, and that's where this data that we'll be discussing comes from. Section 1, which we consider to be questions that only people themselves can answer. They're really intersubjective kinds of questions that we really don't feel proxies, unless they can read your mind, are capable of answering. And then Section 2, where we do allow proxies. The interviewers are instructed not to use any sort of pre-screening. If the DSP says, oh, this person never answers questions, can't do it, you proceed in any event with the assumption that everybody potentially can answer the questions. This is an adult survey, nothing really about children, although we do have a family survey that gets at the needs of kids. We think it takes, on the average, about 50 minutes. I will now turn it over to Alex.
Thanks, Val. So for this presentation, we're going to talk about 2 sets of data that we did analyses on. But before I do that, I just want to say another brief word about the data, just to remind people that, again, This is a data set that is developed for capturing data from people who receive services at the state developmental from the State Developmental Disabilities Agency in whichever state where they're participating. And typically within states, the states draw a random sample of usually 400 people who do the surveys. Well, they end up with 400 completed surveys. They draw a much larger random sample usually. So for this presentation, we have 2 years of data. I just want to briefly say we've got consumer survey data from 2012-2013 representing 13,157 individual surveys completed. And then for the last piece, we're going to talk about health conditions that are reported representing 30 states and 17,415 individual surveys. So one of the things we try to do with this data, even though states are looking at it at an individual level within their states, we also want to benchmark across the country. We do that with states. But then also, because the data set is large enough and relatively robust, we feel that we can do some analyses looking at some other indicators within the data. And so this was an analysis that we did to try and do this. So the question was whether we see racial and ethnic disparity in the preventive screening data. And I want to start with one paper that has already been published by colleagues of ours at HSRI and University of Minnesota, ICI, where we found in an analysis that where people live relates to their access to screenings, and that people who live in more structured settings, for example, group homes or specialized institutional facilities, are more likely to have had preventive screenings and vaccination, and this was regardless of their race or ethnicity. And that people, conversely, if they're living with families or they're living independently, they're less likely to have access to preventive screenings. That's not too surprising, really, when you think about the regulatory system that requires that people often who are in more structured settings, 24-hour support settings, there are often regulations in place requiring that people go to the doctor every year, or there may actually be quality measures that people have had their preventive screenings done. So what we thought was, well, let's do an analysis where we remove the people who are in these more structured settings and try and understand whether we still see racial and ethnic disparities, or we do see racial and ethnic disparities, for people who are living in the less structured settings. So this was work that colleagues of ours did at HSRI. We ended up with a population size of 7,632 people representing 25 states. And for this analysis, we collapsed the race and ethnicity questions that were in the survey. There were two questions. We collapsed them into three groups, African-American, non-Hispanic, Hispanic, and white, non-Hispanic. So briefly, I'm going to show you some of the demographic breakdown of this group when we just look at it. For this population, this is the served population in 25 states that we were looking at, 73% were white, non-Hispanic, 22% African-American, non-Hispanic, and 5% Hispanic. We see some differences by residence type when we look at this population. The blue bars are the white non-Hispanic group, the red bars are African-American non-Hispanic, and the green are Hispanic. And really the takeaway point from this is that the Hispanic group is less likely to be living in an independent home or apartment and more likely to be living in parent or relative's home. And the use of foster care or host home is less across all groups, but then again in the African American non-Hispanic group we see a little bit less. I'm just skipping over that slide because it says the same thing as what this graph shows. And this graph is essentially showing that when we look at preventive screenings, we do see some differences. Just looking at the rates of preventive screenings. Okay? So we see that there's higher rates in the white non-Hispanic population of having gone to having had a physical exam. We see that the routine dentist visit in the past year, again, the red bars are the African-American non-Hispanic population, 62% compared to 76% and 73%. And then again, I want to point you to, on the far right, the pneumonia vaccine in the past year, we'll come back to that in a little bit, we see that the white non-Hispanic population is more likely to have had a pneumonia vaccine in the past year when we look just at whether there are differences by race and ethnicity. Okay? So we see the differences, right? But can we say this is a disparity? We felt like we needed to do a little bit more work to understand the population and to think about disparities in general. So going back to some foundational principles, we're back to 1990 here. This was in a paper that was written by Margaret Whitehead, and this framework was then developed into a framework that the WHO developed or produced, looking at the differences, the determinants of health differences, and then understanding to what extent these may be disparities. In this paper, Dr. Whitehead argued that natural biological variation could contribute to some differences, but that we wouldn't necessarily consider that a disparity if it was something that was considered fair or unavoidable. But as you move down this list of the determinants of health differences, as you get closer to the bottom, for example, number 6, inadequate access to essential health or other public services, that would be something we'd consider avoidable and something that would lend itself to a disparity. Now, we're again looking at the population of people who are receiving services, right? So we have two things where we may see disparities. These may be differential access to long-term supports and services from their state agency, and differential access to some of the health screenings. So we tried to control as best as we could in this data set for some personal characteristics to still understand in this population that has accessed developmental disability services, do we still see racial and ethnic disparities? So within the data set, the National Core Indicators data set, primarily in the background information, there is other information that's collected, including the state of residence, the person's age, their primary language and their means of expression, their level of disability, their mobility status, and then other diagnoses were collected in this survey year, including Down syndrome, Prader-Willi, whether the person had a brain injury, and what was the other one? I think that was close to it. So there are some other diagnoses that are included, and then residence type again. When we look, again, I just wanted to show a little bit of what we saw in terms of breaking down some of these other demographic differences, again, by race and ethnicity. We saw some significant differences in what's reported in our database for level of intellectual disability. So what this chart shows is that the white respondents, or the white people included in this survey, were more likely to be diagnosed with mild intellectual disabilities, and African American and Hispanic respondents were more likely than whites to be diagnosed with moderate, severe, or profound ID. So I'm presenting that. I see a mobility level. Again, this chart shows that really there are small differences, but not very large differences, and that the majority of people in every ethnic group were moving themselves around without aids, independent from mobility. And then when we look at other diagnoses that we had, psychiatric diagnoses, that was the one I forgot, mental illnesses, white respondents are more likely to be diagnosed with mood disorder or anxiety disorder, and African American or Hispanic respondents were more likely to be diagnosed with a psychotic disorder when we looked at the data. So again, we continue to see disparities. We continue to see differences. Let me correct that. We continue to see differences, and we're still sorting through some of this. And here's one of the analyses that we did, and I'm just sharing to illustrate the point here. In our initial analysis, we found that the white group were more likely to have gotten a pneumonia vaccine. That was the far right measure that we looked at. With 28% white non-Hispanic group as compared to 19% Hispanic group. However, when we controlled for all these other demographic differences, The significance, we lost significance for any of these differences, and the more significant predictor was risk factors including whether the person was older, whether they had Down syndrome, whether there was poor health, and whether they had reduced mobility. Okay. We did, the methodology we did to control this was using race and ethnicity and other personal characteristics as independent variables. And essentially the punchline is that controlling for personal characteristics, we did have still significant disparities. We found that African-American respondents were 24% less than Hispanic, and Hispanic respondents were 40% less than white non-Hispanic to have had a physical exam. When we looked at the dentist visit, African-American respondents were about 41% less likely than whites to have had a dentist visit. And African-American respondents were 38% less likely than whites to have had a flu vaccine in the past year. So we do see these disparities that continue to exist, and that leads us to thinking about, okay, so with what we see here, there may be some places where we start thinking about action or where we want to take this. Val, do you want me to briefly go through this? We have a couple minutes left for health conditions.
Sure.
Okay. A couple minutes for health conditions.
I also brought a few copies of our year at a glance for 13-14, which does have some of the data highlights for NCI. If people are interested, I'll leave it up here. I also want to say just quickly, apropos of actionability, we do think this data has been used by states to change practice. Specifically, we find a overuse of psychotropic medication. I say over, that's a value-laden statement, but if you align the use of psychotropic meds with a diagnosis of behavior and mental illness, the use of psychotropic meds far exceeds that number. And some states, particularly Georgia, has taken action to control and to oversee in a more systematic and intentional way the prescribing of that those kinds of drugs. Also, I think we've seen states really pay attention to the fact that access to preventive interventions, preventive care, is less among people who live at home or in independent settings. So making these kinds whether it's for flu or for pneumonia or whatever, more accessible to families in their communities is something states are really beginning to think about. So quickly, I mentioned earlier, we do have some data on health. Previously, we only had mental illness, autism, CP, brain injury, Down syndrome, Prader-Willi. We added cardiovascular disease, diabetes, cancer, blood pressure, ulcers, vision, all of those categories you can see over there in this current, in the last data cycle, 14-15. So we will begin to present some of that data. As I said earlier, we haven't figured out what it means yet. We really haven't vetted it yet. Some of it looks very peculiar, so please don't quote. This presentation will self-destruct as soon as we're finished. Anyway, a lot of food for thought. You can see low numbers on the cardiovascular issue. Slightly, we compared this with the Medicaid population. Slightly more people with diabetes, which is intuitively fairly consistent. However, 3% with cancer, there's something very wrong there. We have no idea what. In any event, we will be looking at these measures more closely, looking at the wording, looking at what records this data is being pulled from, but we think potentially it's going to be enormously useful information. When we ask for other categories, these were the ones most obviously cited: weight issues, sleep issues, thyroid, scoliosis, etc. So, next steps, develop a more nuanced approach to health and wellness, taking into consideration those determinants that Alex mentioned, and also factors that affect people with various racial and ethnic characteristics. Explore how these disparities may potentially affect outcomes, such as employment. And finally, continue to look at subgroups, which we now can because the database is significant, in terms of not just race and ethnicity, but age, urban, rural, residential, etc. Thank you very much.